Okay, we got the millennial. Isaiah 11 is going to sum up some things there. And then we're going to have the eternal state, and we'll look at that beginning like in Isaiah 65 and 66. But basically, we're going to be looking at Revelation 21. I do want to cover this just in passing as we go through this. I got an email that I thought I would about last week's class. Someone was watching online. It says, again, they're concerned, not concerned, but they're not understanding and got a question about it, and it makes sense. It's just the ideal of people die, we go to heaven, and we're with the Lord forever, and then we've got this kingdom on earth, the millennial kingdom on earth, and we're going to have people that are going to populate it and live lives and be ruled over. And I'm going to read the general question, and that will kind of lead into what we're talking about tonight. And they're not being critical; they're just saying, you know, wondering about this. And I may not be right. I mean, as I teach, you're always thinking. They say, as I've been watching the latest Understanding the Times video covering the Millennial Kingdom, please help me understand these things. I thought that when believers die, they go to heaven to be with Jesus. True. There is no marriage. Right, once you leave this body, like, you know, someone dies, like if I were to die, Tony could get married because our marriage is of this age. We will not be married in heaven. We've talked about that. It's like, I'm going to be kind of lost in heaven. It's like, where's my wife? But yeah, there's no marriage in heaven. It's of this age, which makes it legal for someone to marry someone else. And we will live forever with Jesus. With the millennial kingdom on earth, you teach that there will be children born. A generation who will rebel. That's the Gog and Magog rebellion at the end. If people are born, will we die in the millennium? And how are children born? And then just talks about, you got the issue of the millennial kingdom and then being in heaven. And one thing about that is we've got different ages in time, and we've got this period. I want to draw it. I've got an earth, okay? And then when people die, they'll go to be with the Lord in heaven. And there is in heaven, Abraham is looking forward to the heavenly city, the heavenly Jerusalem. And that may be, and I would think that would be something that's not built with hands. It's an eternal city, maybe even called the New Jerusalem. But there is a place. Jesus says, I go to prepare a place for you. And that is when we die. Now, you've got Old Testament saints and New Testament saints. And I think the Old Testament saints, when Jesus ascended, or at least upon his resurrection, they went into heaven at that time. Otherwise, they were in Sheol, the grave, the underworld. The New Testament saints, you know, including ourselves, when we die, we go to be with the Lord in heaven. We're separated from our bodies. There will be a rapture, a resurrection, or the continuation of Jesus' resurrection, where we will... the believers of on the earth, when Jesus comes back, when he appears in the heavens, we will come with him. And I think that would include Old and New Testament saints. And then those who are alive at his appearing, they'll be raptured and resurrected simultaneously, and we will receive our resurrected bodies. So that is everyone up until the time of the rapture. Now, let's get a timeline here. Here's a timeline. We've got the 70th week right here, the 7 years, we'll just say 7 years. Up until this time, if the rapture is pre-trib, that would be fine. Or if it's sometime during the tribulation, that's what I think it is, but that doesn't change the substance here. This is the ending, wherever the rapture takes place, that is the ending of the resurrection, resurrected believers that are going to be with the Lord upon his return. People that die during this time, during the tribulation, being martyred, decapitated, they will be resurrected and rule with the Lord. There will be another resurrection with them, with the Lord, and they will go to be with the Lord at his second coming. But then there are nations that are going to live through the 70th week or the 7 years. Remember, the armies die in battle with the Lord. The kings, the rulers, the leaders, anyone in battle at Battle of Armageddon, they die. The birds come in and eat them up. But that doesn't mean everyone on the earth drops dead. It's just those engaged in the battle. There'll be people living in the nations that their militaries went, and they will then have to be judged. We will be judged or evaluated at some point at the Bema seat of Christ. We're saved, but we'll be rewarded and evaluated for our works, which include Old Testament, New Testament, and then those that were beheaded for the testimony of Jesus and for the Word of God. And then these nations that still are alive, not everyone's going to drop dead. Jesus will be on the earth at this point. It's called the sheep and goat judgment. Joel talks about it. Jesus refers to it in Matthew. They will appear, they'll pass before the king, and he'll judge them on how they treated Israel. Joel makes it very clear. Jesus says in Matthew, how you treated the least of these, my brothers, on how these people of these nations treated or responded to Israel during this 70th week or the 7-year period of persecution to believers and to the Jews. Those that did something for the least of these, my brothers, he'll say, welcome to my kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the earth. They will cross over. They have not died. They have not been resurrected. It would almost be a thrill to live through the tribulation and then go through the sheep and goat judgment and then enter the earthly kingdom of Jesus just like this. Now, I'm not going to complain about what's probably going to take place with me, either go up in the rapture or die before that. I will probably not be one of the tribulation saints that gets decapitated because I'll be resurrected at the rapture. Because I'm a believer. I mean, it's not like in question, unless I'm not, and then I get born again. Okay, that's all hypothetical. But they will live, and they will not have their resurrection. They will live. If they've got a family, they'll cross over with their family. Maybe a husband and wife will move in. Maybe a family will move in. Maybe a husband will go, but the wife will not. Those that did not respond to Israel, they will be cast into outer darkness. They'll be the goats. Get away from me, workers of iniquity. And so the nations will be judged. Now remember, the armies all died. The armies of the nations died. There are, at this point right here, all believers on the earth. And now what we have here is this situation where there are us, we'll just say us, who are resurrected. And there are those who are on the earth living their normal lives, being productive with families, having just like if it would just continue on. It'd be like if, for example, Jesus came back and took over the United States of America tomorrow. It's not going to happen. We're not praying. That's not even an option. But what would change? I mean, if he just came back and took over, life, we'd still have to go to work. He'd change some policies, change some laws. He'd change the way things were set up, change the administration at some level. But life would continue. There'd be day and night. There'd be jobs. There'd be crops. And then he'd put into practice his own economics, his own Green New Deal. I mean, he will have his own. Sun is going to heat up. There's going to be more productive. There's going to be more light. And the world is going to start producing crops every month. So Jesus is going to have his own new Green New Deal. But it's not going to be anything like what we've thinking of. Will there be gasoline cars? I would think that the Lord is going to have, listen, here's what you can do. And he'll be able to explain some of the things that he's built into creation. And gasoline cars will be something in the museum, as will electric cars, because Jesus will have, I mean, I don't know what it will be. I mean, the nations will stream to Jerusalem to learn of the knowledge of the Lord, not just of his righteousness and of his character, but what does the Lord, like we talk about in Hebrews, mankind will reach his full capacity because he will be on the earth under the leadership of the great man, Jesus, who is also the eternal God, the creator, and he will teach them how to do this. Satan will be locked up. The curse will be removed. The only struggle will be the natural sin nature, because they'll still be seeds or the descendants of Adam. Now, they will live and die. It talks about if someone dies at 100 years, they'll be considered a curse. I'll read a few verses here. So there'll be life and death going on at this time. Now, there's several verses that talk about Christ ruling and reigning. Revelation, or in the early chapters, talking to the churches, that it says, you will rule with him. And I'll give you some verses. Now the thing is, we will be ruling, believers will be ruling, the resurrected saints will be ruling with Christ. Jesus will be, here's the earth again, in Jerusalem. Ezekiel talks about David being the prince, and David will be resurrected and ruling. Jesus will be the king of the world. It says that in Zechariah. He'll be the king of the earth. David will be the prince of Israel. So Jesus will be, in a sense, the emperor, and David the king of Israel. But all the nations will still exist, and there will be kings under Jesus ruling and reigning. Most likely, they're going to be resurrected believers. Jesus tells the disciples, he says, you'll rule over the 12 tribes of Israel. So there's, again, how that all breaks out, you know, I don't know. Remember, they asked Jesus, can we sit on your right and on your left? He says, you don't know what you're asking for. They're asking for positions, but we'll certainly be given some. Now, how it's going to interact, there's going to be natural people living on the earth, but then there'll be resurrected people living on the earth. And that would be a problem. It's like, whoa, how can that happen? Well, an easy illustration is, remember, Jesus resurrected, and he walked in and talked. He wasn't limited to the physical capacity. He could travel at the speed of thought. He could appear, he could disappear, but he could eat, he could talk, he could fry fish for them. He could have conversations, he could interact with them, he could give them advice. They had to travel up to Galilee to meet him. He said, I'll see you in Galilee. He didn't walk with them. He just met them there. They had to walk. So you're on a different capacity, but we've already seen. It's like, how can that be? The gospel for 40 days, Jesus interacted, walked with the disciples. It can be that simple. So it's not like, that's weird. Well, it's weird having angels appear and talk to people too, and it happened throughout the Bible. It's weird having the Lord come as a man and live, and be born in a manger. It's weird having the Lord appear in the Garden of Eden and talk to Abraham and all these things. And so that is something that we don't need to think that it's strange. I mean, I've never talked to a resurrected person. They say, well, I'll see you in Des Moines later today. Make sure you drive safe. And then they just vanish and they're there. I've never seen that, but we see it in the Bible in the 40 days that Jesus is on the earth. One of the options is this new city, Jerusalem. When we talk about the new city, Jerusalem, I think I had millennium spelled wrong there. I wanted to get that erased. I should have erased it a long time ago. The new city, we'll just say New Jerusalem, that's going to come up tonight in our story. Now, New Jerusalem, our story, chapter 21. New Jerusalem, the city built by God, it's talked about in Hebrews. We'll look at a few verses in Hebrews if I hurry, and we'll get to them eventually on Sunday mornings. It may already exist. In the millennial kingdom, when we die, we will possibly, we'll go to heaven, we'll be with the Lord, but we may occupy this New Jerusalem in heaven. It may not have to wait for, that's where we may be going. In the millennial kingdom, the New Jerusalem may come down and be some talk, again, now we're speculating, may be in the atmosphere, it may be around the earth. It may be our place where we abide, and we can maybe come and go from it, like, you know, Starship or something, I don't know. Jesus will be in Jerusalem. But this may, or it may be on the earth. We'll look at that again tonight also. But it will be a city where the resurrected believers, Old Testament, New Testament, will live. This will be, in a sense, our city, where those who transfer into the millennium, they will occupy the earth. Now, is this New Jerusalem going to be on the earth? It could be. Is it going to be in the air, above the earth, like the throne of God? It could be. But we'll be there in heaven, we'll be there in the millennium, and when it comes down to the new heaven and new earth that we'll see in chapter 21, we will be there. And then by the time you get to the new heaven and new earth, everyone will be able to come into that city. So I'm not sure if that answers any questions. I'm going to read Isaiah, just chapter 11 of Isaiah, and then we'll look at Isaiah 65. But Isaiah 11, this is, like we said, we talk about the millennium in the just in passing in a few verses in the book of Revelation, but there's several places in the Old Testament it discusses life in the kingdom on earth. So we're looking at, in a sense, if I can say, four places. This is heaven. When we die, we go live with God in heaven. We have there's no marriage there. It's different than it is on the earth. Although we maintain our identity, not just your name and your personality, I think you maintain, again, consider this as we read Scripture, you maintain your national identity, as it, like if you're Jewish or if you're a Gentile. You'll maintain who you are because your physical body will be resurrected. And so if my body physically resurrected, it's going to be my body resurrected. When Jesus was resurrected, they'd recognize him, or they didn't recognize him. I mean, it appears that they walked with him on the road to Emmaus, and they talked to him, and they enjoyed the conversation, but it wasn't until he broke bread that they recognized him, and their eyes were open. So was he hiding from them? Was he concealed? Why? But it was still Jesus. He had the scars in his hands yet. Now, maybe that was just the prop for the day, but you tend to think that that eternal sacrifice would be an eternal mark in his eternal body. Again, that's a conversation. So somehow, our body, I'm not going to have a different body. I'm going to have a resurrected body. But it's going to be our same bodies are going to be resurrected. So there's some consistency there. All right. This is now, I'll just write now, the temporal world. There's what's taking place now. That would include Old Testament, New Testament, where we live right now. And we kind of understand a little bit about what life is like now in the temporal world. That will end upon the beginning of the kingdom. It ends with the 70th week. It ends with Jesus coming back, setting up his kingdom. It ends with the judgment. Then we have the 1,000-year kingdom reign on the earth. Now, again, I'm talking as a pre-millennial, meaning Jesus Christ comes back before the millennium, and there is a 1,000-year reign with Jesus ruling on this earth. It will be just like this. This house could possibly still be here. It would just be in the kingdom, and there'll be Jesus will be ruling and reigning, and I'm sure in the kingdom this house will be rebuilt and this property will be used for something better than what it is over here, because we're living in a fallen world, satanic influence, sin nature, and with the curse on the earth. This, Satan is gone. The curse is removed. Jesus has conquered the cosmos, but he's dealing with people that are living with a sin nature yet. And so he's ruling with an iron scepter. I mean, it's like, that's not just a phrase. Oh, rule with an iron scepter. He'll rule with an iron scepter because he's ruling descendants of Adam with a sin nature, and there's no yes or no. There's no discussion. It's his way or the highway. It's an iron scepter. But he also says, you will also sit with me and rule over the nations with an iron scepter. He tells the church that in the early parts of Revelation. And so we, not when I say we, I mean us of this dispensation or this time period who are resurrected will be with him. That it will end then with the Gog and Magog rebellion, and heaven and earth will flee from his presence, and then we'll have the great white throne judgment, where all the dead will be judged and sent into the lake of fire. And then there's the new heaven and the new earth. I think it's a brand new creation. Now, you understand what we're talking about here. This is what it's going to be like here on earth. When you die here, you'll go to heaven. But then when you die here during this millennial reign, there's going to have to be some kind of resurrection for the believers, and they will be resurrected. They'll join those in the heavenly city, New Jerusalem. Then there's the great white throne judgment. Then in the new heaven and new earth, there will be no death. It'll be completely, I mean, it's hard to even describe because everything is going to change. So it depends on where you are at in this and how things happen. Ask me a question if something that you see, I mean, if you have a question. Does that make sense? Does that help? Is that something you understood completely? Okay. So I just wasted my time. I didn't need to say. But that's what we're talking about. And so I guess the question, like right here, like in here, right, there's no marriage. We're out of this age. Marriage is of this age. And, of course, it'll be over here in this age on the earth in the new kingdom. But we will leave and enter into this resurrected state. And then we'll be ruling and reigning with Christ at some level, probably in the holy city, maybe coming and going from the holy city, the new Jerusalem. And then, of course, everything changes in the new heaven and the new earth, including there's no death and no sin. And so there's no trouble understanding, in my thinking, how people are going to live, how people are going to have marriage, how people are going to have children. It'll be just like this. It's just continued. The thing that changes, Satan's locked up, the curse is removed, and Jesus is actively ruling on the earth. But then these people still have a sin nature. They'll still have to have faith in Christ. And at the end, enough of them have rebelled against Christ that when Satan's released, they join in a universal rebellion against Jesus Christ. And then maybe there's just a small camp of believers that are still holding with him, because those that march out against him in rebellion after 1,000 years are as numerous as the sand. And then, of course, they're consumed. So that kind of answers those questions. I'm going to read about the millennial kingdom now in Isaiah chapter 11. Here it goes. This is just describing the millennial kingdom. It says, chapter 11, verse 1 of Isaiah, a shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse, because that kingship is going to be cut off, but yet the lineage is going to continue, and Jesus will come up out of that lineage. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. Let's talk about the Messiah. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of power, the Spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. So that's talking about the character, the Spirit that is on Jesus. And Jesus read this verse in Capernaum and applied it to himself. It goes on and says, he will not judge by what he sees with his eyes or decide what he hears with his ears, but with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. Now, in other words, he's not going to need evidence. He'll be able to look past all the evidence and see the actual issue and fix problems. But with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he'll give decisions for the poor of the earth. This is during his reign on the earth as king. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. That's when he comes back in judgment. With the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. That would be his second coming, if you want to make the application there. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash around his waist. That's the beginning of the armor of God. Now his kingdom will look like this. Verse 6, the wolf will live with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. A cow will feed with the bear, their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like an ox. Now, there is a change scientifically. The infant, unless it's all just symbolic, the infant will play near the hole of the cobra, and the young child will put his hand into the viper's nest. They will neither, that would probably refer to the animals, will neither harm nor destroy on my holy mountain. For the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord. That is the key. The curse is removed. Satan is no longer deceiving the nations. Jesus is there, and he's filling the earth with his knowledge. And knowledge of him fills the earth. So this is not just biblical knowledge. This is not just scriptural references. This is the Creator who created the universe, created the chemistry, the math, the science. He is now here filling the earth, putting all the pieces together, solving all the equations like no one's ever done before. And people are responding and applying that knowledge and advancing it in their nations. The earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. In that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples, that would be nations. The nations will rally to him, and his place of rest will be glorious in that day. Again, we're talking about the beginning of the millennium and through it, but as time goes on, it builds into a rebellion because we're dealing with the sin. He can't change the heart of people. They've got to be born again, and eventually they'll want to rebel. In that day, the Lord will reach out his hand a second time to reclaim the remnant that is left over from the people of Assyria, from the lower Egypt, from the upper Egypt, from Cush, Elam, the Babylonia, from Hamath, and all the islands of the sea. In other words, he's bringing back all the Jews from all around. He will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel. He will assemble the scattered people of Judah. Very clearly talking about gathering Israel, because Israel will be the center nation of where he's operating from. They will be the most glorious nation because it's his nation. Ephraim's jealousy will vanish and Judah's enemies will be cut off. Ephraim will not be jealous of Judah, nor Judah hostile towards Ephraim. Ephraim's one of the tribes in northern Israel. And they will swoop down to the slopes of Philistia to the west. Together they'll plunder the peoples to the east. They'll lay hands on Edom and Moab. The Ammonites will be subject to them. The Lord will drive. That's at the beginning of the millennium as they're taking back territory that the nations had taken from them. The Lord will dry up the gulf of the Egyptian sea. With a scorching wind, he'll sweep his hand over the Euphrates River. He will break it up into seven streams so that the men can cross over in sandals. Water will still be flowing out of the mountains that form the Euphrates, but it'll be broken up into small streams that you can walk across in sandals. There will be a highway for the remnant of his people that is left from Assyria, as there was for Israel when they came up from Egypt. And this is the highway of holiness leading right in. And eventually the nations will use this highway to come in and meet with the Lord and go back to their nations. It's like an interstate system that will bring Israelites back into the land, but eventually the nations will use it to go back and forth to visit with the Lord. And anyway, it goes on, and you can see other verses coming up there in chapter 12 that would follow. That is the millennial kingdom with the Lord ruling and reigning. Now, let's go to Hebrews on our way by, over going over to Revelation. Hebrews, and I want to read a few verses, go to chapter 11. I want to read a few verses about what we call the holy city, the city of God, the holy city, the new Jerusalem. It is the city of heaven. It would be where God's throne is at eternally. I think this city has to exist now, otherwise it'd be a new creation. I think it's been there for eternity. And anyway, here is a few verses in Hebrews chapter, starting in chapter 11, verse 10. And we're talking about Abraham here. Beginning in verse 8 of chapter 11 of Hebrews. And Abraham listened to Yahweh. Now remember, Abraham understood something about Yahweh, something about the Lord. And how much he understood, he doesn't have New Testament information, but he does understand the eternal essence of God and the presence of God and the promises of God. In fact, Moses in these same verses is going to say he forsook Egypt because he saw the glory of Christ. So Abraham sees something. And again, not necessarily that he saw it in a vision, but he understands something that he can look at this entire world, his entire life, and say, I'm not going to get sold out here. I'm pressing on for something of eternal value. Moses was apparently going to be the crown, was the crown prince, going to be the next pharaoh of Egypt. He was in that position. Exodus refers to it very closely. Acts gives us good indication of that. Hebrews doesn't balk at that idea. And Josephus gives us great detail on who Moses was in Egypt. But in that position of power in Egypt, he saw something of more value than Egypt, and that was the promise made to Israel, and he forsook that because he saw the glory of Christ, and the glory of Christ is going to come through Israel. So there's something these people are seeing, understanding. Here's Abraham, chapter 11, verse 8 of Hebrews. By faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going. By faith, he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob. Now, that's crucial in the story. He was in Ur of the Chaldeans. It was a civilized city. They could read. They could write. They had indoor plumbing, according to excavations. Abraham was wealthy. He stayed in Haran for 5 years, gathered more servants, more animals. He was very wealthy. He had a military traveling with him. So he was very civilized in Ur. But he goes to Canaan following a promise. And the point here is when he gets there, he doesn't move into a city. He stays in tents. He stays outside the cities. He's just always, he knows he's passing by. He went to the promised land in obedience, but he didn't find what he was promised. He was promised the land would be his family's eventually, his heritage. It says, verse 10, for he was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. He was looking forward to the city, not the city of Jerusalem, like you see in this picture, that someday would be the where the temple stood. He was not looking for a city that he could name, you know, Abraham. He was looking for this city that is in heaven. It's an eternal city whose architect and builder is God. So I got to think it's existing. He was looking for it. He couldn't reach it yet. Verse 11, by faith Abraham, even though he was past age and Sarah herself was barren, was enabled to become a father because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. What I not need now is verse 13 through 16. I'll just keep reading. Verse 12, and so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand of the seashore. Here we go again, verse 13. All these people were still living by faith when they died. And he had gone through giving you Enoch and Noah and now Abraham and Sarah. They were all living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They had promises answered and their purpose was fulfilled, but they were looking for something bigger that you can't get on earth. So in a sense, they didn't receive the promise. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. And they admitted that they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show that they are looking for a country of their own. If they had been talking of the country they had left, they would have had an opportunity to return. Abram left Ur to find the city that God promised. When he got to Canaan, he was kept living in tents. He goes, well, this isn't it, and he went back to Ur. That wasn't it. The tents aren't it. I'm still moving towards this city. If they had been thinking of the country they had left, they would have had opportunity to return. Instead, here it is, verse 16, instead, they were looking for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Remember Jesus saying to his disciples, I go to prepare a place for you. He's going to prepare this city. Now, this city is going to come down in the millennium and come back into the eternal state. And we're going to see this city. I got one more verse here. Go to chapter 12. Now, chapter 12, verse 22. The verses before, verses 18 through 21, is talking about the old covenant and the people of Israel. Abraham's people came out of Egypt. They went to Mount Sinai. They saw fire and they received the law and they were terrified. But we have not come to Mount Sinai. Here's where we have come. Let me read beginning in verse 18. He says, talking about the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, and the New Covenant, you have not come to a mountain you have not come to a mountain that can be touched and that is burning with fire. I mean, you can't touch this mountain. To darkness, gloom, and storm, to a trumpet blast, or such a voice speaking words that those who heard it beg that no further word be spoken to them, because they could not bear what was commanded, such as, if even an animal touches this mountain, it must be stoned. The sight was so terrifying that Moses said, I'm trembling with fear. No, you haven't come to that mountain. Verse 22, but you have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem, the city of the living God. You have come to this. Now, this is a case where when it says Mount Zion, we're talking about heaven. We're talking about the New Jerusalem, the city whose builder and architect is God. This can be referred, the city of Jerusalem can be referred to Zion. The Mount Moriah can be referred to as Zion. In fact, the mountain that rises to the west there is actually called today Mount Zion. It's not Mount Moriah. So you can have references to that. But in this case, Mount Zion is referring to this. This is one of those cases where Zion can mean the physical city of Jerusalem, or it can refer to heaven. You got to read the context. And that's what makes it confusing in Revelation, where the 144,000 appear with the Lamb on Mount Zion. It's like, okay, are you talking about this Mount Zion? That would mean they're raptured and up to the throne. Or this Mount Zion, that means Jesus has descended and is with them after the war or during the war, the campaign in Jerusalem. So again, you've got to consider that either one. Okay, they have come to... But you have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem, the city of the living God. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, that's where the church is at, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all men, to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. So, there is, again, this reference to this city that is in heaven, that apparently will be around in the millennium, and it's definitely coming to the new heaven and new earth. Go to Revelation 21 now, and here begins our new material. And again, I'm not sure how far we're going to get. But chapter 20, we went through the thousand years begins, Satan's locked up, those that were martyred, they come back to life and reign with Christ a thousand years. Then Satan is released. Verses 7 through 10, and that's the Battle of Gog and Magog, and they're consumed. That ends the millennial kingdom. And then we read last week verses 11 through 15. Now it's the great white throne judgment. It says right there, verse 11 of chapter 20, "Then I saw the great white throne and him who was seated on it. Earth and sky fled from his presence." I think that, again, that's what I'm presenting right now. I mean, you're always learning and studying and trying to put these things together more accurately. But right there is the passing away of heaven and earth. Jesus said it several times in the Gospels, or it's recorded in the different Gospels. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. And so Jesus says at least three times, whatever those verses were I gave last week. One time he says, heaven and earth could pass away, but my words will never pass away. Three times he says, it will pass away. This is this universe passing away with a word. Just like he spoke and it came into existence, he speaks and it vanishes. Now, that's what we're seeing right there. And then they're going to have the dead stand before the throne. The books are open, they're evaluated, and their names are not in the Lamb's Book of Life, and they're thrown into the lake of fire, and they're going to stay there forever. Now, chapter 21. Now that the heaven and earth has passed away. Now, if that takes place, you still have this, this is the earth. There's still this city of God, the heavenly city, the New Jerusalem, Zion. In this city would have to be the throne of God, the souls of righteous men made perfect. It's the city of the church. It's all the resurrected saints are there. And so that city is in existence today, I believe, in heaven. We go to heaven, you go to the city. God's throne is there. This city will come and manifest in the millennium. That may be where we live, if it's in this atmosphere or if it's on the earth. Now, when heaven and earth pass away, people say, well, where will we be? I mean, you know the answer. The universe disappears like with a roar. It's gone. Where are we? We're in the city. We're in it's eternal. It's the city of God. We're there. And then there is a new heaven, and when it says heaven, this does not mean a new city, a new heavenly throne of God. This is a new universe, new atmosphere, and a new earth. Now, again, what this is, I think it's another physical creation, but it's not this city, because this is there, and you're going to come and descend to here. It's not this universe, because this has passed away, unless you want to read these verses where this is just renewed, and this is a renewed heaven and new earth, which I think you can do that, and I've tried, but I think this is a brand new creation, but it's going to be like this, similar, but you can't bring along your textbooks, your science books, because it's not going to function the same way, as you'll see. So here we go. Chapter 21. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth had passed away. Okay? I'm not wrong. I'm not a heretic for saying this earth and heaven are going to pass away and there'll be a new heaven and new earth, because I just read the verse. Now, maybe you can dance around that and explain it somewhere, but it's like, why is there a new heaven and a new earth? Because the first passed away. It ceased to exist. And there was no longer any sea. So right here, this new heaven and new earth, the first thing you notice is there's no sea. Now, in Genesis 1, that's the first thing you notice. You go out there, God created, and it's like, whoa, there's water over everything. Okay, he began to separate the land from the sea and began to do this. In this case right here, the first thing you notice, there's no sea. Now, there's going to be water, there's going to be a river, but there's no sea. The main thing about the sea is the sea today is the purification system of the earth. The fallen earth in its chaos, its sin, its rebellion, all its pollutants go into the rivers, run down into the sea. The water evaporates pure, comes down like fresh water in the mountains or wherever, and then runs back in. It's the cycle. It's the cycle that keeps the earth clean. In this case, there's no sea because we're never going to need a sea. There's never going to be any impurities in the new heaven and new earth. Again, that's me reading into that. Nonetheless, no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. So here it is, the city. Now, be careful right here, because it's going to be prepared like a bride. And so right away, your mind goes to, oh, this must be the church. Now, you can read that and say, well, this is the church coming down into the new heaven and new earth. But in context here, this is the city of God that's in heaven today. It's the city where the righteous, the resurrected, are going to abide in and possibly rule the millennium from. Heaven and earth has passed away. This is still the city that's foundation and builder is eternal, and God is the architect of it. Now, so this, I think this is a city coming down. Now, where's the church? The church is in the city. But the city is not the church, if that makes sense. Now again, I'm going to read the text. The New Jerusalem coming down, the holy city, the New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for her husband. Now, again, it's beautiful like a bride prepared for her husband. Now, that's does that mean this is the Jesus is the husband and this is the bride? It doesn't say that. It says this is beautiful. It reminds you of a bride that's getting dressed up to present herself to her husband. So it's more about how beautiful is it? As beautiful as a bride. It's like, so don't get stumped. Well, who's the husband? That wasn't the point. The point is how beautiful the city is. Again, or you maybe want to stop and make a big deal about who the husband is. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. Now, that would mean this is new. It may have been in the atmosphere above the heaven and above the earth during the millennium, but now he's coming down, and he's going to join his creation. It's almost like this is the Garden of Eden. Now, it's not. It's not what it says. But it's almost like this is the Garden of Eden coming down to the new creation, and we're going to do it again this time. But this time, there's no room for sin. There's no room for rebellion, because that's all been taken care of. It's all happened, and it's all been cast into the lake of fire. And now, this is going to be the Garden of Eden in existence with man forever, if that would be the image. Does that make sense? Okay, if it doesn't, I'm not going to stop and ask questions. And I heard a loud voice say from the throne, now the dwelling of God is with men, and he will live with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. For the old order of things has passed away. People read this verse at funerals, which is fine, because that's probably what this is like. But this is talking about the old order of things have passed away. That's where we're living, in the old order of things right now, where we have death, we have mourning, we have crying, we have pain. in this, it's the new order. Those are all things of this order. Here, that's all been dealt with. So again, this is not a bad verse to read at a funeral, but it's not talking about someone dying and going to heaven, although it's true, I would assume. It's in context, it's talking about this city coming to this new heaven. We are not there yet. No one's ever seen this happen yet. Although I would think if you die and go to be with the Lord, these things would be true. Verse 5, he who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. I mean, that's pretty a bold statement. What's happening right here? I'm not fixing anything. I've burnt it all up. It's all gone. I've cast it out of darkness. I'm making everything new. It's brand new. Then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. And he said to me, it is done. I am the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. To him who is thirsty, I will give to drink without cost from the spring of the water of life. So there's the water of life. He who overcomes will inherit all this, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the vile, the murderers, the sexually immoral, those who practice magic arts, the idolaters, and all liars, their place will be in the fiery lake of burning sulfur. This is the second death. We talked about that last week. This second death, they've all been thrown in the lake of fire where they've been separated from the presence of God forever. One of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and said to me, now that's interesting right there, see this? The seven angels, one of the seven angels, so one of the angels I was pouring out the bowls comes and says, come, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. Now you got the wife of the Lamb. And he carried me away in the Spirit to a mountain great and high and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. It shone with the glory of God, and its brilliance was like that of a very precious jewel, like jasper, clear as crystal. So now, remember, the church is the bride of Christ. We're being prepared to be the bride of Christ. The church is definitely in the city. Now, is it been expanded that this whole thing has been prepared? This city is now occupied. Before the foundations of the earth, it was occupied by God, thousands upon thousands of angels. But now it's occupied. Jesus said, I'll go to prepare a place for you. It's now occupied with all of the redeemed. Old Testament, New Testament, tribulation, and anyone that got saved during the millennial kingdom, they are there. So the church is the bride of Christ, but also Israel was called the bride of Christ. Can we consider that all believers of all time are now prepared in this city? They are the bride of the Lamb who paid for all of their sins. He has made them holy and righteous. Nonetheless, it's a city coming down. It's the eternal city. The church is there. Now you've got you're introduced, the husband is the Lamb, and this is his bride. And he has prepared his bride through all of time, through everything from the Garden of Eden all the way up to that final battle of Gog and Magog. They've been prepared, and they're all resurrected. And he carried me away in the Spirit, verse 10, to a mountain great and high, and showed me the holy city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven. It shone with the glory of God, and its brilliance was like the very precious jewel, like jasper, clear as crystal. It had a great high wall with 12 gates. So there's 12 gates going into the city. And with 12 angels at the gates, so there's angels in this city guarding the gates, on the gates were written the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. See, now, whoa. This is the church. Well, on the gates of the church are the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. It's like, whoa, why aren't the names of the apostles written there? So again, I think we're thinking about more than just church here. We're thinking about all the righteous, the redeemed of all time. There were three gates on the east. See, there's still directions. Three on the north, three on the south, three on the west. The wall of the city had 12 foundations. And on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. So the gates of the 12 tribes, the foundations of this huge 12 foundations. Like most houses have one foundation. This is so big, it's got 12 foundations holding it up. And they are the foundation is the apostles. The angel who talks with me had a measuring rod. Now again, I'm not sure what to do with this because we've just created a whole new heaven and a whole new earth. You got to assume all measurements and inches and kilometers are all that stuff's gone to some extent, and this is all new. But maybe there's some correlation because they're going to give you some measurements. The angel who talked to me had a measuring rod of gold, of course, to measure the city, its gates, and its walls. The city was laid out like a square, as long as it is wide. So it's a perfect square. He measured the city with the rod and found it to be 12,000 stadii. Now, if you drop down in your footnotes, that's about 1,400 miles. So this city is 1,400 miles. Now, I've given you, and Tony, this is a good time to flash that picture up. I've given you a little map, and it's slightly off. It's a little bit short. It's a little bit short right there. But if you drop this down in the Middle East, you can see right there the Mediterranean Sea. It's a little bit in Egypt. It's all of Israel. Goes up, gets most of Asia Minor, heads over into Greece. And it's going to be slightly bigger than that. But it is 12,000 miles square. I'm looking here. And we got to have, excuse me. I made a mistake. I thought that didn't sound right. That's right, 1,400 miles square. Now, and there's going to be three gates on each side. See, one, two, three. Now, how far apart are those gates? But nonetheless, those are the gates. And I'm not done here. And again, I'm not sure how you're supposed to interpret this. I'm just giving you the literal measurements here. 12,000 stadii, or 1,400 miles in length, and as wide and as high as it is long. So it is also that tall. It's a cube. It's a huge cube that is as tall as it is wide. So if it's 1,400 miles this way, it's 1,400 miles going up. I'm going to erase these gates because now they're out of position here. It's going up. Now what this is, if it's a cube, is you could go 1 mile, have an atmosphere of 1 mile. You see what I'm saying? You could have a mile, and you could have 1,400 stories a mile apart. And you could have your own mountain range on each level, your own beaches. It doesn't say it's got floors on it. I'm just saying that's how big it is. Some commentators have considered that this is a pyramid, because that would be like this. And then up here would be the throne of God coming down, and these would be all the layers of the city of Jerusalem. That doesn't say anything about layers. It just makes you wonder, why is it 1,400 miles high if it's just like nothing, just space? It's got its own universe with this, I don't know. That's what the measurements are right there, and you can kind of see how much territory. If the earth is the similar size as this earth, that's how big that city is, and it's going to come down. It's going to set on the new heaven, or on the new earth, in the new heavens and the new earth. Now, you understand how much we've got to, when we're looking at this, you understand how much we've got to look forward to. Wherever we are at in time, see, people, we're living at the end of time. We're living at the end of time. It's like, do you understand what you're saying biblically? Because first of all, we are still here. The seven-year tribulation, we haven't even finished the 70th week of Daniel. So there's still 7 years left, and we haven't started that yet. So I'm not sure how much longer we've got before we actually start the countdown. Then there's 7 years. Then there's going to be the return of Christ, and you got the 75 days. And then a 1,000-year reign of Christ on earth, which is going to erase all the memory of all the ancient history, because it's going to be the most glorious days the earth has ever seen. And then there's going to be the greatest battle, Gog and Magog, which is barely mentioned, and they're going to be torched. Then the heaven and earth is going to pass away. There's going to be a new creation. So it's like we're 1,007 years away from seeing this. So it's like, well, I hope we live to see the end. It's like, well, you'll see all this, but you've got a long ways to go before we get to this, if we read this literally, which is certainly the way it seems to be written. It goes on, it says, he measured its wall, and it was 144 cubits thick. And if you look down in your footnotes there, 144 cubits is... 200 feet or 65 meters. So again, the walls are very large. You imagine how big they're going to have to be. by man's measurement. Now that's interesting, by man's measurement, which the angel was using. So it's maybe built by angelic measurements, but he's using man's measurements, or used by God's measurements. The wall was made of jasper. Now this is beautiful, of course, was made of jasper. Again, it's beautiful, but in the sense that I can't even imagine, you know, I'd have to go ahead and do like research and understand what each of these stones are and how they would look. They're not just like rock mosaics. I'm sure it's like decorated and trimmed out and all elaborate. The foundation of the city wall were decorated with every kind of precious, and I may go back and read this, 144 cubits thick, the wall, by man's measurements, which the angel was using. The wall was made of jasper, and the city of pure gold, as pure as glass. The foundation of the city walls were decorated with every kind of precious stone. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth carnelian, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysophase, the 11th jinth, and the 12th amethyst. Good luck. I butchered those. I'm sorry. The 12 gates were 12 pearls, each made of a single pearl. Now, if you can imagine pearls, these are pearls that they're going to cut a gate out of a hole for traffic to go in and out of, and they're still going to have enough of the pearl left remaining. The great street of the city was of pure gold, like transparent glass. Again, transparent, that means light is just going to shine through everything. It appears there's going to be no shadows. I did not see a temple in the city. And the reason there's no temple is because the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. God himself is there. He doesn't have a temple. He's there. And the Lamb. Again, notice the deity connected there, still staying strong. The city does not need the sun or the moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and the Lamb as is its lamp. Now, this doesn't say there is no moon or sun, because we did create a new heaven and a new whole universe. There may be a sun and moon. It's just they're not needed for light, because the light is coming from God. So keep that in mind. It doesn't mean we're not going to need the sun and moon, it doesn't mean there's not going to be the universe, the stars, or whatever. It means you don't need them for light because you've got the presence of the Lord there. The city does not need the sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gives it light, and the Lamb is its lamp. Interesting here. Some people, there's three interpretations of this. One is this part of the chapter goes back and describes the millennium again. It's now, we've got to this point, new heaven, new earth. Now we're going to go back and talk about the millennium. Some think it's talking about just the eternal state. But this, again, is talking about the city coming down into the eternal state. And here, one thing that causes the question is verse 24, the nations will walk by its light, and the kings of the earth will bring their splendor into it. Which gives the impression, that sounds like what? Millennium, where the nations are coming, and then they're going to actually be coming into the holy city from the nations, and bringing the marketplace is going to be in the holy city where the resurrected saints live, if it's the millennium. But if this is the eternal state, which I'm presenting, and I think John is here, you got to look at it, it gives the impression there's going to be nations still functioning. Now, these would have to be new nations, or the nations of the people in the city that come out and occupy the new heaven and new earth. This is all resurrected people. Will they still be living in their nations? I mean, there's no marriage, there's no family. That's just one of those, what are they talking about right here? I mean, is this talking about the millennium? Is this talking about nations in the new heaven and the new earth? Who established these nations? What was the barriers, the boundaries? What were the classifications? Is it from this age in the next, or is it new? Or is this a reference to people that are living in the new heaven and new earth like nations? I mean, just something to think about. On no day will its gates ever be shut, for there will be no night there. The glory, that's again, no night, that means no sleep. You all ever wonder about sleep? How much of your life is wasted on sleep? Why did God create sleep? And that's something I think about once. It's like, you go to sleep, it's like, why can't we just like take a nap, or, you know, you have a tree that you get fruit from the tree of no sleep or something. But yeah, you get tired. Even Jesus got tired. It's of this age. So does this mean there's no sleeping in this age? Not a big question, but something I've thought about. On no day will the gates ever be shut, for there will be no night there. It doesn't say you won't sleep. Maybe you sleep during the day. They sleep in Alaska during the daylight. The glory and honor of the nations will be brought into it. Another mention of the nations. Nothing impure will ever enter it. Well, that sounds impossible anyhow. Nor will anyone who does what is shameful or deceitful. It's like, what? Why are we talking about shameful or deceitful in the new heaven and new earth? See, that's why some people read this back into the millennium of the people that are living. But only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Well, that would justify everyone who's theirs, names written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So that means they're not doing anything deceitful because they're all the saved. This continues into chapter 22, and I'm going to have to quit and pick this up next week. Then the angel showed me the river of water of life as clear as crystal, flowing from the throne of God and of the Lamb down the middle of the great street of the city. Now imagine this as a pyramid, potentially. God's at the top, and coming from his throne, running through the great street, is this river, or however you want to picture it, but that would work. On each side of the river stood the tree of life, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Sounds like millennial material here. No longer will there be any curse. See, it almost sounds like they're describing the millennium because the curse is removed. No longer will there be any curse. The throne of God and the Lamb will be in the city, and his servants will serve him. They'll see his face, and his name will be on their foreheads. There'll be no more night. There will be no need. They will not need the light of the lamp or the light of the sun, for the Lord will give them light, and they will reign forever and ever. The angel said to me, "These words are trustworthy and true. The Lord, the God of spirits of the prophets, sent this angel to show his servant the things that must soon take place. Then verse 7, "Behold, I am coming soon. Blessed is he who keeps the words of the prophecy in this book." Then John signs off and have a few more things. We'll look at that next week. A lot of information, kind of exciting. Some of it I feel pretty confident about. Other times it starts to slip away and you don't know really where you're at least at this point as I'm teaching. If you read commentaries, they'll give you different ideas. Sometimes even the commentators seem to like, well, you know, it's like it's the popping of the reoccurrence of nations. It's like, well, what's that about? Healing the nations. How'd they get sick in the new heaven and new earth? Why do they need healing? You're in the new heaven and new earth. So are we slipping back and forth in that description? So you got the millennium, and you definitely got a new heaven, new earth. Some of those verses have to go one place or the other. I'll pray, and we're finished. Father, we do thank you again for the chance to look into your word. We thank you for the exciting future we have before us. We ask again that we may serve you, be faithful to you at this time in history, that we may fully enjoy your presence and rejoice in your character, in your nature, and in the light that you have for us. Again, Father, we do thank you for the opportunity today and ask that we may be good witnesses and that we may see revival in our own land, in our time. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you for your time.